Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. One of the benefits of doing my programming is that I'm constantly getting an education. And when it comes to our physical well-being, I am so pleased when I have an opportunity to interview someone who will share information through their writing, through their book, about disease or critical health situations that so many of us have absolutely no knowledge about. And that is the case this evening. My guest is Nicoleta Skoufalos, and she is a woman who has really been affected not only by a disease, but also has taken on the task of, as a medical professional in the mental illness area, she said, we need to understand about an invisible disease. Now, what is that? That's the autoimmune disease category. And her title of her book is Understanding Autoimmune Disease, A Therapist's Guide to Invisible Illness. Nicoleta, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Donna. I'm very thrilled to be here.
You are a licensed clinical psychologist. You're in private practice in New York City. You work with couples, adults, but you specifically are oriented to working with people who actually have chronic medical diseases. And you like to focus on the autoimmune diseases and also women who have gynecological conditions. Nicoleta, you yourself have your own story because you have an autoimmune disease, don't you?
Yes, I have three, actually.
Three? Oh, my goodness. How in the world did you find out that you had three?
It's a pretty long, over a decade-long journey. But it didn't start out that way. It started out with one, and that was lupus. I was diagnosed with lupus in 2010. And it was actually quite an interesting and very serendipitous experience because I was finishing up my graduate school training, and I was working on medical floors in a hospital with patients who had medical conditions. And I actually started to experience symptoms myself that to someone looking from the outside would look like medical symptoms. I had swollen joints and swollen fingers and ankles and pain and hair loss and rashes and nausea and all sorts of problematic symptoms. But I was telling myself, this must be just me stressed out. I'm trying to finish my dissertation. And then I was very fortunate that I had a supervisor who said, this looks like lupus. You should see a specialist. And I was diagnosed very quickly, which is not the norm for people with autoimmune diseases. And then it wasn't until 2022 that I was subsequently diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis and early Sjogren's syndrome, which is actually quite common for people with lupus to then be diagnosed later on in their 40s with one of these other diseases as well.
So that is amazing.
It was an interesting journey, but it opened up a whole area of specialization for me in my practice that I am not thankful to have these illnesses, but I'm thankful to have been able to make some meaning out of it.
Well, I find it so fascinating. Before we started our conversation, I had mentioned to you that I am in awe of the human body because it is such such a massive, complex aspect of the human experience. And I think of what we know today and all of the different modalities that we are working with today, whether it's Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic, Korean medicine, I don't care what it is, Native American. We all are so unique in how our bodies will respond to certain things. It just is amazing to me. And for you to have ended up with not just the one diagnosis, but two additional ones, that is just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. You obviously have a great deal of compassion because of what you yourself have experienced. And in your book, and you wrote it because you wanted the layperson to understand that if someone is given this kind of a diagnosis, this is not their imagination. This is something that is very real. And you go into a lot of detail in your book about how we need to understand, both as a layperson and also, if we're a counselor or any kind of a therapist, we need to be able to recognize that these are things that are not necessarily going to be in your face, like measles or even cancer or some other things that are, gee, they're just right there, they're black and white. This isn't the case with these autoimmune diseases.
No, and, there's periods with autoimmune diseases where you call it a flare and the symptoms are acting up. And maybe during those periods, you might be able to see something like a rash or a swollen joint. But oftentimes, when the person is not in the middle of a flare and exhibiting symptoms, you could look at them and make the assumption that this person is healthy. And part of the problem is that not only do lay people make this assumption because they just assume that you look healthy, you must be healthy, but even medical professionals oftentimes invalidate these patients' experiences because typically, on average, it could take about 7 years before a proper diagnosis is made. Sometimes these patients start feeling sick before the blood work catches up with that, and you can see it in a test that, okay, there's something positive here showing up and a diagnosis is made. So for many years, a person might be told, this is all in your head, this is just stress, go and get therapy, try exercise, and you'll be fine, and they're repeatedly dismissed, which is why this is often called the invisible illness, autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, there's another layer of invisibility, even just in terms of how much funding these diseases get compared to some other illnesses like cancer and HIV and heart disease. It's historically been significantly less funding up until COVID. And it seemed to change after COVID because a lot of people who were developing long COVID symptoms, those symptoms were very similar to autoimmune disease symptoms. And there is some research saying there might be some link there.
Mm-hmm.
So funding has increased recently, which is a good thing.
Yes, it is a good thing. Now, for you, you were given, if I remember correctly, your first diagnosis when you were about 27. And one of the things that you relate to very, very specifically is that you loved being out in the sun. And
yes.
You are of Greek background, and you love the water, and you'd love to go to the beach, and you'd be with your friends. And when you're in your 20s, and all of a sudden you're losing your hair, you're developing rashes. I mean, it was all kinds of stuff, and it was devastating to you to be told that you could not be out in the sun because of the type of lupus that you had. And this is another conundrum. It just doesn't show up in one way. It shows up in various ways. So it would be very, very challenging, I think, for a physician to even be able to discern what is it really that's going on. We know something that is going on, but we don't we don't have much of an education in it. And let's face it, when you're a clinician of any level, you go through schooling for years, and you've got to be aware of so much. And then to have this level of, I'll use the word invisibility, show up and go, now what do I do? What can I do? And you bring out the point that so many people have adverse reactions to the medications that they're given. So we really, it's like throwing mud at a wall. You have no idea if it's going to attach to the wall and, you know, whatever, or if it's just going to go to the ground and be totally, you know, not what you wanted to have happen. This is this is really a big challenge.
It's a big challenge. I mean, two people can have the exact same diagnosis. Two people can have lupus, for example, and their course and prognosis could look very different. Somebody could live a life where it's disrupted very little. Somebody could have multiple hospitalizations with organ damage or even needing a transplant, like a kidney transplant. And it's really hard to know. The doctors can't really say what your course is going to be. Sometimes the most they can tell you is, you know, you have a mild case or you have a serious case, but what follows after that is really unknown. And the same thing with the medications. They do know that there's certain medications that make it less likely that you might have some serious flares. But again, it's not a guarantee. And the same goes for the understanding of what causes these diseases as well, because it is known that there's some genetic predisposition, but just recently they've been able to identify some isolated gene variants, but that's not the full picture. Not everyone with those gene variants will develop the illness. There's also some sort of trigger that must turn these genes on in some way. It's very much a mystery, like you say. Quite fascinating.
One of the difficulties I feel that a physician has, and I address this because it is communication. And in our world today, people are lucky if they get 15 minutes with their doctors.
Yeah.
It's appalling. The doctor does not have a chance. And I think most people that want to be doctors or nurses really want to be able to communicate with their patients. They want to know. Patients lie. And if someone is sitting in the office and the doctor said, okay, how are you feeling? Which is not an unusual question. It's quite a common question. And they say, oh, I've been doing great. This is great. This is something. But you know what? In conversation, they say, all right, you're here visiting me. I need to know why. What's going on with you? That takes time. And that has to also have the establishment of trust, that the doctor is actually going to listen to what they have to say. And I'm sure you've experienced that too. And people will say, oh, I totally forgot about something. Hey, doc, I needed to tell you about this. I was out working with such and such, and then the doctor might say, were you around any kind of a chemical? Yeah, I was using such and such. Okay. Good. When did this happen? When did you start feeling it? It's like being a detective.
That's right.
And that takes time. And most doctors today are so frustrated because they don't have that time with their patients. And we are living in an era where the patient has to really realize the onus is on them many times, and they better go in prepared. This is something you emphasize, that before a patient talks to the doctor, to get dressed first, have their notes, and then sit down with the doctor and have a conversation.
That's right. I emphasize this a lot in the book, and I always talk to my clients about this. you have to be able to advocate for yourself. And if you feel like a doctor is not listening to you, I understand doctors may not have a lot of time. Sadly, that's just the way it is now. But you can find a doctor who will listen and who will take you seriously and not dismiss your concerns or ignore your questions. So that's a big part of what I write about in the book and what I work on with my clients, writing out beforehand what you want to talk about, what your concerns are and your questions are. But also, if you're not feeling heard and taken seriously, you're not stuck. There's many doctors, and you can seek out someone else. You can also work on trying to let your doctor know that you're not feeling heard. Sometimes a doctor who's very well-meaning might not realize that they're doing something that's hurtful to you. So you can work on speaking up and trying to communicate that to the doctor. And some doctors will then work with you on that, and you might be satisfied and stay with that doctor. But if that doesn't work, there are other options. And sometimes patients, you know, they might feel like they're getting what they need in terms of treatment and medication from a doctor, but still might want that extra space to talk about the feelings that come up when you're living with this kind of illness. And people oftentimes seek out other providers for things like that. Sometimes they go to alternative doctors like acupuncturists or holistic doctors where they do get a little bit more attention. Or they'll come to therapy to make space for that or go to group support groups as well. But it's very important to have that space to feel like there's communication and to continue to advocate for what you need in the medical environment and also outside of the medical environment, whether it's at your workplace, because you might need accommodations there, or even with your own family members and friends.
This is something that I feel in your book, Understanding Autoimmune Disease, that you also show up very importantly. And as human beings, our emotions can be very blinding at times. Other times, if we acknowledge those emotions and not run from them, then we're able to find our options that we can work with. And there are so many studies that you have found that will emphasize how we really need to be aware of the mind-body-spirit connection, which is great. But you have an author, Karen Kemper, and you bring her out, and she was diagnosed with scleroderma. This is an autoimmune disease, and apparently there's hundreds of these diseases that affect the autoimmune system, and that is something else that people are not aware of. It's not just lupus. There is so much other effects that can come in. And she was totally dismissed by the doctor.
Yeah.
And it was because she was female. Now, this is something that it's very tough to swallow. It really is, but it's been around for a long time. There's biases about people of different cultures, different skin tones. I mean, it's just so sad. Instead of being able to look at somebody as a human being and say, all right, let's see what we can do, or let's see if I can even find out what is troubling you. Again, it's that communication factor.
That's right. Unfortunately, so about 85% of people diagnosed with autoimmune disease are female or women. And it's very well documented that women's pain is not taken as seriously as men's pain in the medical world. And women's, what's classified as women's illnesses, aren't as well-funded in research as much as men's illnesses. So it is very sad and very unfortunate. And there's also, like you mentioned, there are hundreds of autoimmune diseases, multiple sclerosis, type 1 diabetes, Still's disease, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis. There's so many. But in almost all of these, the majority of patients are women. Not to say that there aren't, you know, some men who get these diseases as well. And in some of these autoimmune diseases, actually lupus being one of them, the majority is women of color. So that also adds another layer to some of the biases. So it is really important to be aware of not just, you know, your own relationship with the doctor, but the bigger system that can make it harder for you to obtain the care that you need.
Mm-hmm. I find it fascinating, too, that when this is discovered, and this can be very, very difficult for young men and women when they are diagnosed with this, that this can be passed along genetically. And I know mm-hmm. of a couple that determined they were not going to have children because of a particular pattern that ran in the family. And they did not have children. They said, nope, we won't pass it along because it is something that, yes, it could skip a generation, but why are you going to do that? Why are you going to have children that are going to inherit this? And if they have children, this is going to go on and on and on. And this is an attitude, a feeling that, you know, when I found this out from about my friends, then I just said, well, that's your choice. And I, you know, I stand behind whatever decision you make. And they never regretted that because mm-hmm. they saw the demonstration too many times in the family lineage, whether it was aunts or uncles. The more they found out, they said, no, we made the right decision. So they shifted their thinking and they put their energies into supporting, you know, people that had children or foster care or anything like this. So they were able to engage in that way. You yourself, in finding out what you did, as you mentioned at the very beginning of our conversation, shifted in your own professional environment to becoming more aware and working with people that are dealing with the challenge, that they have something that is going to be dealt with for the rest of their life. And this is something that people need to be aware of, too, that if they're given a diagnosis, it doesn't mean that it's the end of their life, but they will have to do adaptations, won't they?
That's right. Yes, there's so many ways to learn how to cope with these illnesses. You can still, you know, find a way to work. Maybe sometimes you might have to pause, but there might be ways for you to make that happen, perhaps working from home or finding accommodations to work different hours, for example. Many people still manage to have fulfilling romantic relationships. And we talk about, you know, how do you figure out when to disclose to someone? Like if you're in your 20s or early 30s and you're dating, when do you share that with a potential partner? It is possible, you know, just because you have an illness doesn't mean you can't find love. So we talk about things like that. There might be hobbies that you might not be able to do in the same way anymore, but perhaps there's other ways to express that part of yourself that could feel fulfilling as well. I think underlying what you're asking right now and what we're talking about is really the sense of how do you help the person maintain a sense of identity and feel connected still to who they were before the diagnosis, even though so much could possibly change because of the diagnosis in terms of your functionality or what it looks like on the outside, there are still many ways to hold on to who you are on the inside. And mm-hmm. that's a big part of the work that happens in the therapy.
And that is very, very important. I think the word adaptation is a significant one. You bring out different studies, and there is lupusuk.org that you mentioned. So this is something that affects people around the world. Do you find research that it's more in the Western world than in other countries?
I think you know, historically, the research has taken place more in the Western world. But it is an illness that affects people all over the world. I just wouldn't be able to say if it looks like it appears more in the Western world because it's been studied more in the Western world, or if it actually is more. I mean, it affects like 400 million people worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So it does occur. It does occur everywhere. But we are studying it more in the West.
I noticed that in the one study that you mentioned that's associated with England, that 80 to 90% of the patients that are diagnosed with lupus, that particular form of autoimmune disease, that fatigue is their most debilitating system of experience. And
yes.
The fatigue levels, what I found interesting here, the fatigue levels, a quote from your book, do not tend to correlate with disease markers of activity, which means blood work. And increases in medication seem to have little benefit when it comes to reducing levels of fatigue. So taking a nap, resting, is the cure. And a lot of people may say, gee, I've got to keep going. I can't stop. I just, that is terrible. I shouldn't have to feel this way. But yet,
that is a
significant system of experience. My goodness, that's one thing they say about people in the United States, that we have got a real challenge in making it okay to rest.
That's right. It's not just fatigue like a normal level of tiredness. It is this unbearable fatigue where you really can't function. You can't think straight. It feels like maybe you're carrying cinder blocks walking just from your couch to your bathroom. You really need to rest and sometimes sleep for like a day or 2 days, even just literally sleep. And you're right, we don't really as a society allow for that, which is terrible. And the other thing that's terrible is in the quote and what you were mentioning, that this is not measurable. So it's not showing up in blood tests, or there's no way to really say, like, this person is doing better or worse in terms of fatigue other than their self-report. And the treatment is not what is impacting this symptom. So doctors can tell you, you look like you're doing better because your blood work might look better, but that is incongruous sometimes with what the patient is feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a really psychologically disturbing experience for the patient.
Not only with trying to explain it to a physician, if the physician does not have any background or knowledge, which can happen regarding lupus, you know, they may go and check with a book and say, well, gee, that's this, thus, such and so, but it really is tough. Now, you, because you have been affected by this very, very deeply, there was that awareness that you had that you weren't even willing to listen to your body. Well, I think that's most of us when we're younger. I was guilty of that myself. And we think that we are superhumans. And the body will often give us signals. It's time for you to just rest, period. Put your body down. And you made the statement about yourself saying you didn't feel that you were going to do anything to acknowledge it if your body hadn't been very emphatic about letting you know something was wrong.
That's right. I don't think even if the only reason I think I did something about it was because my supervisor said, this is not normal. This is not you just being stressed out. This is a serious medical condition. You need to go to a doctor. I think, you know, I was barely 30 years old, actually, at that time. And I was in yoga multiple times a week. I was very fit and young. I didn't think I never thought anything about my health. And what I did to myself is exactly what often other people do to people with autoimmune diseases. It's just, we're so quick to dismiss listening to our bodies and just push forward. So it really took somebody else pointing it out to me before I did anything. And I don't know how long I would have ignored it. It just scares me to think about that.
Well, fortunately you did, and I am so glad that you have written this book, because my ignorance was quite high relative to autoimmune diseases. I had no idea that there were so many. There's all kinds of names, and I'm sure if you go on the internet, you're going to find a plethora of information. Sadly, it's very difficult, contrary to what we like to think, that we can figure out what is wrong with us, which some of us might be able to do. But the body is very, very complex. And too frequently, if we are not willing to check out what we need to check out, have that blood work done. Sadly, for most people, the blood work is very minimal in what it explores. Yeah. So you have to be very clear with your physician. And as you said earlier, talk with them. Give them information. If you have someone that says, oh, I don't believe in nutritional stuff, I don't believe in this and that and the other, then find yourself a new doctor. You know,
That's really right.
And this can be a tough one because so many doctors since COVID have retired. So there's this void that we're sensing, but there are those people that are willing to listen. And they are there. And maybe you ask your friends, who's your doctor? Who would you recommend? I know insurance comes into this. There's so much medically that I've just seen this so often, and I've even been guilty of it, where we go, well, I'll just wait a while before I have something checked out. Or, gee whiz, this is going to cost me so much. I don't have insurance, or my insurance was changed without my knowledge, or in the case of some people, it was eliminated. You know, you have all of this, and it really presents a challenge, but there are those options, and there are those venues that can be explored. Now, you have, Nicoletta, you have your website, and people can be in touch with you. You have your contact page there. I'm going to give out the website, and I'm going to spell it out for you. It's greentpsychology.com, and that's green, G-R-E-E-N, T like Thomas, psychology.com, greentpsychology.com. Do you have a final thought you would like to share with my listeners?
I just want to thank you for having me on the show and just let everyone know that the book Understanding Autoimmune Disease, A Therapist's Guide to Invisible Illness is published by Hatterley Press, and it can be found in anywhere where books are sold. And I truly hope people educate themselves and learn a little bit more about these diseases. Because in the United States alone, there's about 15 million people living with them right now. And so I guarantee you know someone, and there's someone in your life who is going through this. So I just hope everyone takes the time to learn a little bit more.
Nicoletta Skofalos, I want to thank you again for being my guest. And I want to spell your last name for my listeners. It's S like Sam, K like King, O-U like Unicorn, F like Frank, A L like Lucy, O S. Nicoletta Skofalos, I want to thank you again for being my guest.
Thank you, Donna.
Donna Sebo here. We are taking a little bit of a break. When we come back, I'll share some other information with you and some information about authors that are coming up on the show. You know, I want to say before I take a break here, it has been, for me, a journey. When I think of starting my broadcast so many years ago, I'm coming into my 25th year of doing my programming, and I think of the people I've had the privilege, and I call it a privilege, to be able to talk with, whether it has been about health or fiction, anything and everything that I've been able to share with you. Through these many years, it has educated me. If you're like me, you acknowledge the fact that you don't know a heck of a lot. You could go to school every single day of your life, have a photographic memory about everything that has ever crossed your life path in the way of written material, videos, whatever. And there's so much we don't know. And that is the factor relative to illnesses, diseases, how something that is done perhaps with good intention creates a disease that otherwise would not have existed. You see, there's so much that we don't know. It's important we keep ourselves active. It is important that we not forget that we are always on the road of learning, and that it is up to us individually and collectively to recognize that the human experience, the environmental experience, the other forms of life experiences are always going to be going through shifts and changes. And this is something where when we can talk about things and we can open ourselves up to it and say, all right, how can we work with this? What are our options? Just like Nicoletta. This is a woman who has an empathy with the people that she works with because she is living the journey that they are going through. That is important. That is so very important. And you never, ever know it all. Period. We're taking a little bit of a break, and I'll be back with you shortly. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to Mrs. Sebo's Classics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Well, who's coming up on The Donna Sebo Show and Warriors for Peace? Oh, my goodness, the holiday season is upon us. Oh, my, my, my. Well, here we go. We're going to be talking with a wonderful woman, Renee Baribault. She has written a book about her journey to the Camino. Yes, because the sacred pilgrimage route, she actually experienced herself, and it's called A Pilgrim's Guide to Walking Wisdom. Renee Baribault, that we're going to be talking with her tomorrow evening. And then, well, we are coming into a new year very, very quickly. So if you've been feeling like you really want to put something together, let's look at success being a numbers game. That's the title of the book that Kyle Young has put together. We're going to find out why he calls it a numbers game. And then we're going to be talking about Manhattan Triptych with Catherine Butterfield. And also, there is no other Ram Dass. Now, there are millions of people around the world that absolutely love this man. He passed away. But Parvati Marcos is a gentleman that has actually put together the book relating to the various legacies that Ram Dass left. And I say various because he wrote so many things. He did a lot of lectures, and there is a lot of information. You know, in our world today, which seems to be so troubled with misery and just, my goodness, if you finish watching the news, you just think there's an apocalypse around the corner every 30 minutes. Well, in some people's lives, that may be the case, but that is not the overall picture. So I think we've got a wonderful lineup of people for this month of November. And don't forget that the newsletter went out. And yes, you're going to see some vacant spaces in guest listings, but that's because I am waiting for people to get back to me so I can then let you know about when they're going to be on the air with me. But that newsletter has good information in it, and you are welcome to subscribe to it. It comes out just once a month. I don't send out a whole bunch of information. So if you would like to get that in your email box, the first of every month, by golly, it'll be there for you. And also, Warriors for Peace, yes, the very first show is about thinking ethically with Scott Gelfand. And oh my goodness, I don't know about you, but I find that that is something that is vitally important for us to pay attention to, and that is what we're going to be discussing on Warriors for Peace. You know, if you are an author and you have a publication and you would like to be featured on my show, I've already talked about being on my radio show. However, there's the television programming as well. And we are in the process of setting up for filming. We had to cancel the filming for the month of October due to various situations. And so now we are rescheduling. So if this is something that you would like to be featured in the television show, then please be sure that you go to my website, DelphiInternational.com. And what I would like to encourage you to do is to contact me. Be sure you use your email, which will be in the contact request form, but let me also have your phone number so that I can call you. Sometimes the schedule gets so wild and wacky that the phone is the quickest way for me to be able to reach you. So if you do that, then that is going to be terrific. But send me information about your book, and then I will send you the protocols for the television programming as well. Okay, so there we go. I've got some other things that I want to share with you, so let me do exactly that. With all of the... Oh, and I forgot to mention, check out the Author's Showcase, because you're going to find direct connections to these people that have been supporters of my show for a very, very long period of time. And you will find that their television as well as their radio interviews are going to be available to you 24/7. And speaking of availability, my player has the latest 13 to 15 hours of programming. You can just turn that on and listen to one show after the other if you so desire. And then in the archives, remember, those archives are in chronological order. So take the bar on the right side of your screen and bring it all the way down to the bottom for the latest programmings, and you'll see them again in chronological order. Well, I wanted to bring up something that crossed my desk, and that is about airports. Now, so many of us, especially with the holidays coming up, there have been cancellations and all kinds of different challenges. There have been alerts that have been sent out relative to some of the major airports where flights have been rearranged, and because there is a situation with the air controllers. Well, when you think you've heard about everything, there's usually something you have never heard of before. And I don't know about those of you listening where you might be located, but here in Seattle, we have literally every day thousands and thousands of people, I'm not exaggerating, that are in the airport. And it is rare to be at the airport when you do not have congestion. People trying to drop individuals off. You have shuttles that are coming in, dropping people off. You have, it's just absolutely incredible. Well, the SeaTac Airport is one of the biggest airports in the country. And because we do international travel as well, and the airport is being expanded, it just is mind-boggling when you go there. But this is something that goes on in New Zealand. And it was published in the New York Times. Traffic jams outside of the terminals. Oh, that is just something you have to go through. There's just no way of avoiding it. And you have taxi lanes that are specifically for taxis. You'll see the police out there trying to make sure that traffic control is maintained. And with the holidays coming up, it is absolutely incredible. And one of the things that airports are trying to deal with, because Americans especially, we just absolutely love traveling, but people in Europe love to travel there, and this is all year round. So when this holidays start up, the traffic is incredible. And the last time I was at the airport, I just shook my head, because being at the airport 2 hours in advance of your flight leaving, that maybe is not enough time. And I'm being very serious when I say that. But in New Zealand, they are encouraging, and this is what every airport does. It says, take a shuttle so that you don't have to worry about parking. When I tried to go to the SeaTac airport, I had something I had to pick up. Trying to find a parking spot was next to impossible. And you just have all of this that goes on, and it's so easy to get in the wrong lane, so you might find yourself having to pay extra for getting into the right lane. Believe me, I've been there. But in New Zealand, at the Dunedin Airport, and that's spelled D-U-N-E-D-I-N, there are signs that were put up. They wanted people to limit the goodbye hugs. They are so busy. They say, max, this is what's on the signs, max hug time, 3 minutes. For fonder farewells, please use the car park. I mean, you really have to have a good sense of humor. Again, maximum hug time, 3 minutes. For fonder farewells, please use the car park. Like I said, I think I've heard everything, but I will tell you, I've never heard of that particular situation. Well, so many of us are concerned about carb intake, and I know that I've got some very good friends, and I've had members of family, especially my husband's family, that are prone to diabetes. It runs in their family. And it's something that with what they've got, they can control it with how they eat. So they don't have to have insulin if they monitor their diet. Now, we've heard this over and over again, and this is knowledge that goes back for centuries. It really is quite significant. The Arabs, during their golden age, were in medicine. They were way ahead of the Europeans, and it's the same with the Chinese. The Chinese medical environment, thousands of years old, just like Ayurvedic medicine, thousands of years old, they were very familiar with diabetes. And typically, the people that got diabetes were those that were wealthier and were able to have access to, you know, foods that the average person, a peasant, whatever, you know, just through the thousands of years, they could not. They could not get the attention, nor could they afford often food that was going to be healthier for them. Well, this is a recipe for a low-carb Caesar salad. If you're a person that loves Caesar salads, I'm one of those people. So when I came across this, I thought, this is really a good idea, because you're basically staying with this, with the recipe itself. And of course, a Caesar salad is nothing really complicated. You use a little bit of fresh garlic. Usually they rub the bowl that they toss the salad in. But if you want, you can put fresh garlic, you know, crush it up and put it right into the salad. But you want a whisper of it. You don't want it overwhelming. And then you have a little bit of lemon juice and Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. And there's an egg yolk that's added to it. And that has been done, I remember as a girl, a young girl, being in a restaurant. It was the first time I'd ever seen a salad prepared at a table. And this was an Italian restaurant, and they brought all the ingredients. You were able to watch the waiter put everything together. So this particular chef, I came across his information, and his story was one of being diagnosed as being pre-diabetic. And so he said, you know, as a chef, this is something for me. He said, I just needed to change those things that I need to change in my dietary patternings. And he said, for me, sweet things were just a regular part of my diet. It was just a cookie or something like this. And of course, many chefs are tasting the food that they are preparing as they go along, depending on what that food might be. It may or may not be something that is, well, to their best interest physically, anybody who's going to be in that pre-diabetic area. So he said he was going to really work with food because that was his business. He has a passion for food. So he put together this low-carb Caesar salad, and it is so similar to the regular salad that it is absolutely amazing. Now, what you need is a large head of romaine, chopped, or you can use any other kind of lettuce, and there's black kale you can put in. You know, you can use whatever the greens are that you thoroughly enjoy. And he used, contrary to what I said about how they would rub garlic around the salad bowl that the salad was going to be tossed in, so you got a whisper of garlic. But he recommended using 3 large garlic cloves, crushing them, and 5 anchovies, or 1 tablespoon of anchovy paste. Now, that is something I really enjoy. Some people do not like anchovy paste, but it adds to the dressing. It really, really does. You need a tablespoon of Dijon mustard, a tablespoon of miso paste, which surprised me, 1 egg yolk, and 1... Let's see what I've got. The egg yolk and 1 tablespoon of freshly squeezed lemon juice, 2 teaspoons of red wine vinegar, 1 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of coarsely ground black pepper, 5 tablespoons of olive oil, or whatever your favorite oil might be. Olive oil is the go-to as far as I'm concerned. And then 1/2 cup. That's about 2 ounces of freshly grated Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. And instead of croutons, he used 1 palmful of pork rinds crumbled. Yes, so this is what he did. The dressing is what makes this salad so wonderful. You take your garlic that you've crushed, your anchovy, whether it's the actual anchovy itself, or you're going to have the anchovy paste, you're going to take that, the mustard, the miso, the egg yolk, the lemon juice, vinegar, Worcestershire sauce, salt, and pepper, put it in the blender and just zap it. And then, with the blender running, very slowly drizzle in your oil. And you need to taste it just a little bit. You can put a little bit out the end of a toothpick and put it on your tongue, and you'll know if you want to adjust anything. Now, remember, anchovies are very, very salty. So put that aside. Now, your dressing, if you're having a big group of people, you could double this recipe, triple the recipe, and you would have that dressing all ready to go. But if it's just you and a significant other and maybe, you know, members, just family, then this serves as a side dish for people. So, you know, just have a big bowl that you toss everything in, and you just know that your Reggiano, you can mix it right in with the salad, or you can actually have a little bit of extra on the side. If somebody wants more of the cheese on their lettuce, which is what I like to do, really. I just really like cheese. And that's great. Now, he said, if you don't like pork rinds, that's fine. But if you're wanting to avoid the bread, then you can just leave it off. But whatever your choice might be, this is such a wonderful salad. Now, someone might say, what about the egg yolk? I will tell you, in all the years that I have experienced having a Caesar salad made with the egg yolk and the dressing, the vinegar, even though that's a raw yolk, the vinegar and the miso and the anchovies, all of that just takes care of the egg yolk. You don't have to worry about getting a negative from that. It just becomes a part of it. And it is absolutely wonderful. And you can do like the restaurants do and add a cup of your favorite meat. If you like shredded pork or you like chicken or you like beef, you know, or bacon bits. Whatever it is that you want, you can add to that. You could add a little bit of sliced carrot or shredded carrot if you want it, or tomatoes. Just remember, this is a salad that is very, very healthy, and it's got so much of a balance in it. The lemon juice, all of it, you can't go wrong. It really is good. So I thought I would share that with you this evening, because so many of us say, well, I can only have so many carbs a day, and that's fine. But remember, you can make substitutions if that's what you want to do. But that is a delicious salad, low-carb Caesar salad, and I just thought it was amazing. How are you doing with your daylight savings time adjustment? Well, I think most of the people I know are doing just beautifully. But it feels so strange having everything go dark at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's 5 o'clock in the evening, obviously. It's so dark out. But that's what we have to go through for the next few months. And then we're going to go back into seeing more and more light of day. Having been up in Alaska during the dead of winter on various trips through the years, I really appreciate the daylight that we do have. And we have just had a great deal of rain. But you know what? I think sometimes we just need to look at our environments and realize that every environment that we're in has its good points and it has its not so good points. And this is something we just have to make the adaptations to it. And those of us in the Pacific Northwest will joke and say, gee, we have to develop web feet because we get so much rain. And apparently we're going to have a lot of rain this winter, and there will be colder temperatures. They usually hit in January and February, stronger than any other time of the year. And we are experiencing some very, very nice weather. Right now we've got rain, and it is working out just beautifully. And those of you that are going to be on the road traveling, this is a month where so many people plan on taking vacations and being with family during Thanksgiving. Be aware. Please be alert. Pay attention to your driving. Be alert when you're at the airports. And just know, take your time. Give yourself extra time. And be prepared to check in for those weather reports, because there is so much going on today. If you think you might be stuck somewhere, maybe look at what other options might be available to you. So just be alert, be aware. And I'm so glad you've been able to be with me. I appreciate my guests that I've had today. And I want to say, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There is so much in this life to be grateful for. And by golly, just go for it. Say thank you. Oh, and don't forget to give people a smile every now and then. Surprise them. They might be grumpy. Give them a smile. Put a little light in their life. Donna Sebo here. I'll be talking with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.